Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, welcome to the NASCAR on NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan, back here with another post-race edition of the podcast. Today, post-Atlanta Motor Speedway edition of the podcast, and great to be joined by our resident NASCAR Hall of Famer, Dale Jarrett. DJ, thanks for being here.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me, and quite the season we have to start with through 6 weeks.
It has been, DJ. Six winners in the first six races, and I'm really glad that we have you. Three-time Daytona 500 winner, 1999 Winston Cup champion, to analyze this particular race, because I really want to have a driver of your caliber to explain what precisely happened during the final run at Atlanta, and really specifically the final 15 laps of Atlanta. Kyle Larson led 269 of 325 laps in this race. Certainly seemed, DJ, as if he had it locked up. And then seemingly out of nowhere over that final run, Ryan Blaney catches up to him, passes him, and wins the race. So I'll start there, DJ. How did Kyle Larson lose this race over the final run?
You know, Nate, as I watched this race unfold, and then as it got down to those last 15 laps, and you could see kind of what was happening, that Ryan Blaney started to make a move, and Larson just seemed to lose a lot of grip. To me, I couldn't tell at the beginning of that last run if Larson was taking care of his tires or he just didn't have the car to put more of a gap between himself and Ryan Blaney to where he might be able to just ease off a little bit later on. As I sat and watched, though, and not to make this about me, but it took me back listening to Jeff Gordon, especially talk of races at Rockingham back in the 90s, that I led so many laps and thought that I had Jeff Gordon right where I needed him in my rearview mirror by quite a bit for a lot of the race there. And he would come back and beat me at the end of those races, and I just couldn't figure it out. So here's my take on why that happens. As the leader of the race, being dominant all day long, why do you want to mess with that race car? You don't want to touch anything. It's exactly where you want it. So no adjustments, but all it takes is just a little bit of a difference in a set of tires, and your car's just not quite up to what it was before. And then you add the fact that your competitors have been working on their cars because they see how badly they're getting beat. And that's exactly what I believe happened here, that Ryan Blaney and his crew continued to work on their race car, making it better. He had a pretty good long run car all day long. He seemed to have a little bit more speed and did a great job in this last segment to be able to take care of his tires and have that little extra gear whenever he needed it. And I think he could see that there was some struggles going on for Larson, particularly whenever he caught Joey Logano, who was a fast enough car to kind of give him some trouble, making him change his lane. Logano was right on the bottom where Larson liked to run all day long and was making his speed. And I'm not saying that Logano did anything wrong. I think he was doing everything he's supposed to do as a race driver. Until you're a lap down, you don't have to move out of the way of the leader. And I think that Logano saw this as his chance to stay on the lead lap in case we had that caution, and then anything can happen from there. So I just believe it was a culmination of two things happening. Larson's car not quite as good, Blaney's car the best it had been all day.
You mentioned Logano, DJ. I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't want to touch on that. Much was made of the fact that after Blaney passed him and with Logano ahead, and then Logano let both of them by, Kyle Larson said on the radio, "Man, I hate Joey Logano," or something to that effect, which I think he was just talking about, obviously, how Logano races him. But that happened with about eight to go. Did it seem to you? It seemed to me, from your perspective, did it seem to you like this was inevitable anyway? It wasn't necessarily Logano who affected the outcome. Blaney was probably going to get past Larson regardless.
Yeah, I think so. I think that Larson was just struggling with his car so much that didn't matter whose car it was that he was coming to lap. If they had enough speed, it didn't have to be another Penske car to make that situation like that. You know, you're hoping as a driver and one that's leading the race that you might get a little bit more courtesy from a driver that you're coming up to. But by the time that Blaney got by Larson, got there, and then that Joey pulled over, Blaney was running the top so well that Joey just couldn't hold him off. And then he pulled over basically and let both of them go. By this time, a caution wasn't going to do him any good. Plus, he was in the free pass position, which would have been just fine also. So, I think Logano did nothing wrong. He did what he's supposed to as a driver. But it's very frustrating as a driver, especially when you've dominated a race like that. You don't get that opportunity many times, and you just hate for him to get away. So, was not surprised by Larson's reaction. I think most of us would have said the same thing.
And I appreciate your modesty, as always, not making this about you, but I do want to make it about you a little bit, because you know what it's like to try to conserve tires at a place like Atlanta, a place like you mentioned, Rockingham, a place like Darlington, where the abrasive pavement just chews up your tires. I can remember you beat Kurt Busch in 2003 at Rockingham. I remember covering a race there where I think it was a tire management situation similar to this. Busch wasn't quite as dominant, but you passed him in the final 10 laps or so. And I think it was a case of veteran driver like yourself just knowing how to pass at that time. I think Kurt Busch was in his third year in Cup. This situation, though, DJ, very interesting to me in that Blaney has less experience than Larson. And we hear so much about how difficult it is to save your equipment at a track that gobbles tires like Atlanta. And Blaney post-race said he let Larson go early in the run, didn't use up his tires. It was a 56-lap run, by the way, to end the race. It was extraordinarily long at Atlanta. So how does Blaney do that? One, like, his lack of experience in being able to do that is impressive. But you, as a former driver, DJ, I mean, you understand, like, when Blaney says, hey, I saved my tires for the first, I don't know, 25 laps, how do you do that on a track where you know the fall off is going to be 2 or 3 seconds over the course of a run?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that come to mind. If you make your car better to where you're not having to use the brakes and you're not having to slide the car around as much, then it's a lot easier to do something like that, to run where you want to and not abuse the tires in that situation. The other thing that comes to mind here, that this just tells me that Ryan Blaney is that driver that we all have expected for so many years. He does a terrific job. I think this is fifth straight season that he's had at least one win. And so, you know, that's good, solid performance. But we expect more from him because we see glimpses of exactly what he can do. So not only is he very talented in getting speed, now he's starting to think his way through these races. And that was a perfect example. There's nothing more difficult than, especially when you have a good car and you know that you're in the last run of the day, it's going to be the longest run on tires, and know what you have to do, that you have the capabilities of saving a little bit and then making a run at the end. There was no reason to think that you were going to be able to run up by what you had seen all day long and take the lead away from Kyle Larson in the first few laps of that last run and then be able to hold on. So why not be smart and play this a little bit on the conservative side for those first 20, 25 laps and know that you've saved something to make a run at the end? You've got nothing to lose. You haven't been able to pass Kyle Larson all day except on a restart or on pit road. And so you had to do something a little bit different. So I really applaud him. And again, makes me really excited about the future for Ryan Blaney, because now he's thinking his way around these tracks. And again, that's so difficult to do as a driver. We don't have a lot of these type of tracks to where the surface is just worn out, but there's enough of them out there to make a difference. And when you start doing that, that makes you better at all different type tracks.
Yeah, it was a thinking man's approach, much like I would have expected from somebody like yourself, DJ, or Jeff Burton, the way he was able to calculatingly win that race that Ryan Blaney was able to do. And what also impressed me, DJ, is he won it running the high line for a lot of that final run. And he beat the guy who I think many of us would consider the master of the high line. I mean, who's better at running the high line than Kyle Larson? It seemed like in this first race at Atlanta with Hendrick, as some of us expected, and as we saw at Homestead Miami Speedway, Kyle felt a little more comfortable running the bottom. But I thought it was interesting on the Fox broadcast, both Clint Bowyer and Jeff Gordon said that maybe Larson's spotter, who was telling him, hey, Blaney's running high in these turns, low here, Larson's spotter could have done a better job in feeding him information. That if Larson would have known, hey, you're getting beat by a guy who's running the line, you normally kick everybody's butt running, it might have helped. Your thoughts on that? Did Larson get enough information in terms of what Blaney was doing?
I don't think, but the and certainly you have to be careful with TV, as we well know, as to exactly when that information is coming along.
Great point.
And was that the first communication about what Blaney was doing to start cutting into that lead? If when we saw that on TV was really kind of the first time, then I think the information came a little bit late and it wasn't nearly as specific. When you say he's running high, well, I think Jeff Gordon and Clint Boyer did a good job of pointing this out. You know, that there's a lot of footage there that can be different as far as what someone might consider high. You know, is that right just inches away from the wall? Is that straddling that top seam, which is exactly what Blaney was doing? And that would have been very good information to have because it's so hard. You're having to drive so hard there and be up on the wheel so much that for Larson to take the time to be able to look back and see exactly what Blaney's doing, almost impossible. So a little more information, I believe, would have been very helpful. I think that Kyle Larson, once he saw throughout the majority of the day that his line of using Kevin Harvick's line around there was the preferred thing to do, I don't think he ran up top enough to know exactly what his car had. And then when he got up there, you could see he was really struggling. It was like that. He couldn't, once he got to the center of the corner straddling that line, especially up in one and two, that he needed to turn his car back away from the wall. So I don't know if his car was a little too tight in that situation and he just didn't have the confidence to ride around the wall like he wanted to. So there was a big difference there and more information. I'm sure it's something that they will discuss as driver and spotter as they move forward.
And as I mentioned, that final run, both of these guys pitted on lap 269 for four tires. Race ends on lap 325. So 56 laps on that final set of four tires, which of course that's an eternity at a mile and a half worn out racetrack like Atlanta. So curious on this one, DJ, this thought occurred to me. And again, I've never driven race cars like you. So this is where I need you to maybe weigh in. I remember that Dale Earnhardt famously told Jeff Gordon, giving him some career advice, that he needed to get off the dirt, get on pavement and learn how to save his tires. We all know that Kyle Larson's background is very much in the dirt. I know he's been in Cup for a few years, you know, running stock cars now for several years, but do you think his dirt background and maybe lack of tire management throughout his entire career, might it come into play here versus a guy like Blaney?
I think that's something that you learn. And I think that maybe Larson hadn't had cars at this place. He's so very talented that hasn't had to come into play for him a number of times. And maybe he never got his car to the point when he was at Ganassi that he felt comfortable in moving around and also to be fast enough to have to save his tires. Because, you know, it's hard when your car isn't fast to try to save your tires. And this was a situation of, okay, I've got this fast car. How do I go about that? So if you haven't been in that situation very many times, it makes it even more difficult. We know that Larson, is as talented as anyone out there, but his talent comes from being able to hang this car out and literally just get the most speed out of it lap after lap. It looked like yesterday that maybe he was doing that because there were very few times, if any, that in a longer run, which wasn't as long as this last run was in those 56 laps, that he was able to still have reasonable speed at the end of those runs. But when it comes down to time to winning, you always find yourself trying to do just a little bit more and get a little bit more out of your car. And he seemed to be in an okay position until he came up on a fast enough car to lap, and that being Joey Logano, that it was making him change his line and change what he was doing driving. And I think at that particular time, he tried to get a little bit more and maybe hurt his tires up in a part of the racetrack that he really wasn't as familiar with because that car in front of him had taken his line away. So I'm sure that Kyle Larson, the next time when we go back to Atlanta this year, they actually have two races there this year, that he will be better in that situation. And this is a learning game Doesn't matter if you've been doing it 5 years or if you've been doing it 20 years, there's always something to learn. And I'm sure that Kyle Larson will have that in the back of his mind, whether it's Atlanta, whether it's if we go back to California Speedway at some point in time. Certainly Darlington comes in to a thought there, that because I always thought that that was a place that Larson could be really good, but hasn't really shown to be that yet. So I think there's still some work to do there. And that's just, you're basically a product of your environment, what you come from, not growing up running, you know, stock cars on short tracks to where, you know, you've got one set of tires to do everything in an afternoon and night with, that you have to really conserve those. So I look for Larson to be much better in future races.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of lessons to learn here, as you mentioned, DJ, maybe not just for him, but also for his team. But you know, Larson now in his eighth season in the Cup Series, I don't want to pick on him too much because, as you mentioned, DJ, I mean, he's got phenomenal talent, but yet there has been this question that's followed him a little bit. And this might have been more to do with, you know, that he wasn't with Hendrick Motorsports Party this year. Ganassi gave him good cars, but I think this year we've clearly seen Hendrick is top tier equipment. Does this raise questions again? You know, you mentioned about what this win might do for Blaney in terms of establishing him. I think now we look at him and say, wow, he knows how to like close out a race. Some of the questions about Kyle Larson, he had so many second place finishes before getting his first mile and a half win at Las Vegas earlier this year, are, does he have that mentality to close out races, that race management? How does he recover from a defeat like this? I know you said there are lessons there. You know, does he talk to Rick Hendrick? Does Rick Hendrick address it? Does the team get involved? Like, how does a team recover? I'm sure you've had a devastating loss like this before in your career. Like, what's the overarching lesson, I guess, for Kyle Larson in terms of like, how does he rebound from this?
Yeah, I think that you go and you take away the positives more than looking at the negatives, because, you know, that's something that I believe that the driver, you know, has to be strong-willed and strong-minded enough to be able to accept the fact that, okay, you know, I did everything right for literally the majority of this race, and we were in a perfect position. Is there something that I can do better the next time? Do we need to remember that even though we think our car is almost perfect, that everybody else is working on their cars late in these type races? And so I think it's a full team aspect that has to get around this. And you know, the good thing about this sport is you don't have to wait very long. And I think this was probably, if I look at it, I think that might be the worst case scenario for the rest of the field going to Bristol on dirt for the first time, that Larson lost this race, because I think he's going to be even more motivated to go show them exactly how good he is at Bristol this weekend. So I believe a lot of things that have happened in his life over the last 15 months for Kyle Larson. And I believe that this is only going to make him stronger in that respect too. And so I look for him to rebound and move forward. And I think he's just too talented and definitely in the right spot now. He's going to win a lot of races.
And again, I don't want to pick on him too much because I think the team was involved. You know, as you mentioned, there's that temptation when you have a dominant car like he had to not tinker with it too much. And you get to that final run and suddenly he doesn't have that blazing speed. And I know, you know, Cliff Daniels, I believe now in his, second full season as a crew chief. So he's relatively inexperienced and young. Do you think there's lessons here that Hendrick goes and talks to Daniels and the team about, like, you know, we mentioned the spotter. There's probably other things here that team's probably still coming together too.
Yeah, there's no doubt that everybody's going to learn something from this. And I think that will be the mentality of Rick Hendrick as the owner, and then Cliff Daniels as the crew chief, that, hey, we could have all done something a little bit better here. So let's take it from the driver to the spotter, giving better information and maybe a little bit sooner in paying attention to that. And then the crew chief saying, hey, you know, let's not just sit on what we've got here. And then again, it might just be a simple fact that, you know, again, that set of tires, as great as Goodyear is in making these tires and them being as close to the same with each set, all it takes is for one of them not to be quite as good in a run like that. And all of a sudden your race car changes completely. And then the other side of that is you get pressure from someone. All of a sudden you start having to drive your car a little bit different. And so there are so many lessons to be learned, but I believe that this will be a learning curve for all of them. and they will continue to be better, and especially as they get in these type situations.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Talk a lot about the runner-up here, and I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit more about the race winner. First, I just want to tell you, I know you're a betting man, DJ. So in the odds powered by PointsBet Sportsbook, Blaney opened as the ninth most favored driver. He was ninth on the list of favorites, opened at 15-1. And I saw somebody tweet last night that I think he was close to being in that range, but that was where he was in the odds powered by PointsBet Sportsbook in the opening number. So being a betting man like you are, I would presume that you're going to be looking at value with Blaney in the upcoming races, because I would think this could be the first of more than a few victories this year, right?
Yeah. The bad thing is whenever you don't take him, whenever he was that, and he goes and wins, and you know, now those odds are certainly going to come down. But you had to look that there was really nothing telling us that Ryan Blaney and his team were ready to win this year. Yeah, they've shown some speed and been better, but it's always been those little things, whether it was making a wrong adjustment or making a mistake on pit road, they just couldn't seem to find themselves in the right spots. Their cars, they weren't making the right adjustments to give Ryan a chance to race up front inside the top five at the end of these races to see what he might do. So, yeah, just looking at Ryan Blaney and knowing how good he is, those are great odds to take a chance on. And I hope somebody out there did. I didn't, but I hope somebody out there did do that in a big way, because it would have been a nice payday. But I think that this is what we need to see more of, that they're starting to move in the direction that they do give Ryan Blaney what he's looking for at the end of these races, because he's capable of doing the right thing. So, you know, is it a combination that Todd Gordon has to listen to his driver better to get him exactly what he's looking for? Or is Ryan Blaney needing to give a little bit better information so that they find themselves in this position more often? Because if he's running in the top five on a regular basis, then we're going to see a driver that knows how to get it done at the end of these races. They gave a stat yesterday, maybe now it's still all of his races that he's made the winning pass in the last 10 laps of the race. So, you know, it's just incredible. He's ready. He's there and ready. He's, you know, he's in good shape and he's got a good head on his shoulders and he understands the importance of trying to go after these wins whenever it really counts.
Yeah, that was an interesting stat that I think all of his victories have come with a pass in the last 10 laps, I believe they said, DJ. And that would make Ryan Blaney maybe the closer, and certainly maybe the new closer, because the guy we've always talked about as the closer is, of course, Kevin Harvick. Again, I'm surprised here, DJ, because Harvick has been so good at Atlanta recently. Two victories in the last 3 years. He's led so many laps there over the last six or seven seasons. He got in trouble early and had to make an extra pit stop because I think they knocked a valve stem off. He fell a lap down and then his car just wasn't good enough. I mean, he soldiers on. He gets a 10th place finish, but again, certainly not the Kevin Harvick that we're accustomed to seeing or the Stewart Haas Racing Fords really up to snuff here in the first six races. What's your level of concern right now for Harvick and Stewart Haas early in the season?
Big trouble. I really believe that. You know, that Stewart Haas has been relying on the success of Kevin Harvick and Rodney Childress for, you know, a number of years here, even though they, you know, they're still talented drivers, but they're very young over there now with two of the four drivers in particular. And You know, but to see Kevin Harvick struggle at Atlanta, and I think they played some radio that he said that was the worst car. Of course, you can be a little dramatic at times as a driver when things aren't going well. When you have a bad car at Atlanta, it is like these 500 miles are going to last 24 hours and I'm never going to get out of here. And that's what it looked like. I was really shocked that they would show up and their car not be better than that. I understand they had the problem, but, you know, he still had plenty of time to be able to drive his way back from that if this car was any good at all. But what a remarkable finish. I mean, if you just look and think, okay, well, Kevin Harvick finished 10th. You know, maybe things didn't go good. If you didn't see the race, maybe didn't go, you know, good on that last run or something like that. To realize that he took, at the very best, a 20th place race car and finished in the top 10, just, you know, talks about how good he is, especially at that racetrack. It's just unbelievable that he could do that. But the rest of the cars, I think Cole Custer was next for them, maybe at 18th, something like that. And just not a good day. And I think they're in some real trouble here. You know, the problem is you, if you rely on one driver and one team within your organization to be doing everything and gathering all the data for your team, then everybody can't drive like Kevin Harvick. So I think there's some things that they have to look at there to become more competitive. And Kevin Harvick's they're going to figure things out. He and Rodney will get things figured out. But the problem right now that I see is we know how different the schedule is this year versus any other year in so many different ways. I realized last year they didn't have practice in qualifying, but now you've got so many different types of racetracks, new venues that we're going to, that it's hard as a driver to get into a rhythm. You know, they just finished Atlanta, and even though there's not many tracks like Atlanta, you know, now he's talking about a dirt track, and then they go to a short track at Martinsville, you know, and then before long, you're going to a brand new road course in Austin. So just so many things coming up. It's hard to get into a rhythm as to what you need to do and changes you need to make as a driver and as a team to make yourself better as an organization and be what you want to be and which is championship worthy. So a lot of work and, you know, I know they're going to get that. They've got all the backing from Ford. And so there's a lot of extra hours being put in to make sure that they give Kevin Harvick what he needs and the rest of their drivers, too, to compete at a much higher level.
Yeah, you make some great points there, DJ, about the schedule as well. I mean, five more road courses coming up here in the regular season, Daytona race, another Talladega race. There's a lot of wild cards ahead. And we heard Rodney Childers, Harvick's crew chief, say last week that the team has lost 70 counts of downforce because of the way NASCAR is inspecting the cars right now. So couple all of that with the fact that, oh, by the way, NASCAR is also switching to a new car next year. So how much time and resources could you invest in the current car? In the past, I think, and you said it really well, I mean, it's a testament to Harvick's leadership of that team that he still just gritted it out and finished 10th of Atlanta. No quit in Kevin Harvick, clearly. And that's the type of leadership that's been great for Stewart Haas Racing since he's been there. But yet, it seems like there are all these extenuating factors this year, especially, where digging out of this hole is going to be maybe tougher than it ever has been for him and this team.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And all of those tracks and different tracks that you mentioned only brings up the fact that we're looking at possibly more winners than we've ever seen in a season. So, you know, that if and Kevin Harvick's going to go to victory lane at some point in time somewhere. I have to believe that. But when you talk about Bristol and these road courses, and of course you've got Talladega and Daytona, as you mentioned, still as such wild cards, the competition, yeah, it's really close for the most part, but I think these venues open up opportunities. You know, Martinsville is another one of those. Yeah, we have certain people that we know run well there, but that race always brings us something different than what we're kind of expecting. So you just talk about so many chances for different winners, and then that just starts putting more pressure even on the most experienced and the better teams that are accustomed to winning. I mean, Kevin Harvick won what, 9 races last year and, you know, hasn't even really sniffed being close to a win here so far. And I realize we're only 6 weeks and 6 races in, but, you know, for them not to be in a position yet to even think about a win. You know, they've struggled to get Kevin a car that can compete close to the top five. And that's kind of what you have to do before you can think about winning. So a lot of work, but as each week goes by and you're struggling continuously, then that only adds more pressure to everybody. All of a sudden you start trying to make major changes in your cars. And if what NASCAR is doing now with the inspections, and you talk about the 70 pounds of downforce, well, that's a ton for these guys. That's what they're looking. They have built their entire car around this. And when that's taken away, all of a sudden, all your setups and the things that you were doing to make Kevin Harvick the driver that he is and give him the equipment to compete, all of a sudden that's gone away. So now you're starting to search. And when you start searching, especially in the middle of a season, when you don't have practice, you're not allowed to test, that can make for a very, very long year.
As you mentioned, a really interesting trend here to start the year. Going to make some drivers nervous if they don't get that win. I don't know how many guys are going to get in on points, but the 2021 season opens with six races, six different winners. The last time a season opened with that many winners was 2003. Nine drivers won the first nine races that year. And 2000, it was 10 drivers won the first 10 races. So my question to you, DJ, I mean, does the trend continue? And especially with the Bristol Dirt Race coming up next week, and again, those road courses we mentioned, does the trend continue? And does the Cup Series possibly get to more than 16 winners for the first time in the regular season during the playoff era?
Well, I'll answer the last part of that. I think there's a very real possibility that we look at 15 or 16 winners here, wow. Which, you know, we really didn't think that was possible, but because we have these new young drivers that have come in and done their job, then I think that makes it very viable that could happen. Because, and when you look at it and what has taken place in these first six, I would say that probably Truex Jr. might be the only one that you would have sat down and said in these first six races that that he would be a winner. I think we all knew Larson was going to win. Was he going to win that quickly? It was the thing. And so, yeah, I think that there's a lot to be determined here, because we have some very talented drivers and drivers that we know and expect to go to victory lane that are going to do that. So I don't know if it'll continue. When you look at, we don't know what to expect this weekend. My gosh, this is just going to be incredible. I mean, taking cars that are in no way, shape, or form are they designed to run on dirt, and especially, you know, a bank dirt track like this is. But when you look at who has the chance to go there and win, who are your best options? Well, when I look at that, I think of two drivers that have already won that I put in the top three that I know that are so good on dirt. And that obviously is Larson and Christopher Bell. I think that they probably are the two best on dirt. But I would put in there very close to that a driver that hasn't won yet, and that's Austin Dillon, who had a great day at Atlanta also, and that team running well. But, you know, Austin's really good on dirt too. And then you throw in others that, you know, really are good on dirt. Can they get themselves in a position to make all of this happen, stay out of trouble? I don't know how you do that. I never was any good on dirt. And so I don't know how you can do that in cars, especially that aren't going to drive very well in this situation. But you have to think about, you know, Ricky Stenhouse, who's been on dirt a lot through his career and does a good job, hungry for a win. And yeah, heck, he always runs good at Bristol on the concrete. So it'd be interesting to see if he can do it on the dirt. And then the other would be Bubba. You know, we know what he did in the truck, doing an excellent job there. So is this an opportunity for him? So many possibilities, but I just see this, you know, it almost seems like that the NASCAR season is following along and the NASCAR season started before March Madness did in college basketball. But if the NASCAR season is going to be anything like this basketball tournament so far, what a ride we're in for.
Yeah, this is the March Madness stock car version of the basketball tournament. I think you're right, DJ. And by the way, everybody, I hope you're paying attention. I think DJ just gave you some great long shots and those odds powered by PointsBet Sportsbook. Bubba Wallace, Austin Dillon, both former Eldora truck winners. Dillon won the first truck race at Eldora, and obviously Stenhouse. So a lot to keep an eye on. And you're a guy who's seen everything, DJ. And here's one thing that you've never seen before. Dirt race in the Cup Series in NASCAR. Should be a lot of fun to watch this weekend at Bristol Motor Speedway. Appreciate all of your insight, all of your perspective as always. DJ, thanks again for joining us on the NASCAR NBC podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nate. This was great to relive that and looking forward to this weekend.
Our thanks again to NASCAR NBC analyst Dale Jarrett for joining us to recap the Cup race at Atlanta Motor Speedway and to give us a little preview of what we can expect to see on the dirt at Bristol Motor Speedway. I'll be back with another post-race edition of the podcast after Bristol next week with another one of our analysts. As always, I don't want to jinx it, but we are angling for someone you haven't heard from yet on the NASCAR on NBC podcast this season. So if you're paying attention, you probably have already figured out who that is, but I'll give you a hint that he also could write a theme song for the NASCAR on NBC podcast, so that should make it rather obvious. Should be a great guest to discuss what surely will be a wild weekend at Bristol Motor Speedway. Thanks as always to NBC Sports producers Aaron Feldstein and Emily Conboy for helping with the coordination and recording of the podcast, which also is available on the Motorsports on NBC YouTube page. You can check it out there. Thanks to Aaron and Emily. Thanks for their hard work. The NASCAR on NBC podcast is available wherever you download podcasts. Please leave us a rating and review to help spread the word. And any feedback you can always send to me on Twitter, @NateRyan is my handle. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR NBC podcast.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.